The following audio is from LCBC Church. To learn more about LCBC, visit lcbcchurch.com.
Man, I love that song because it brings back so many memories for my wife and I. Whenever we moved to Pennsylvania several years ago, we realized that once we got here, we knew a whopping two people in the whole state, and we wanted friends. And eventually, we got the pity vote, the pity invite, to come do Thanksgiving with some of our coworkers. And so we show up at their house, we do the Thanksgiving meal. They realized how lonely we were, and they said, hey, before you go home, we have something for you to borrow. Here's season one of Friends, so you can have some friends. And guys, we were so lonely, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but from Thanksgiving, we watched all 10 seasons of Friends in 4 months on DVD, folks. Like, we had to get up and change out the DVD. It was legit. It wasn't just like Next on Netflix right now. We even had to have that like embarrassing phone call where you call them in the evening and you're like, hey, you let us borrow season 4 this morning. Can we pick up season 5 from you tomorrow? We did nothing outside of watch Friends. So love that series, and I love the series that we're in now of how do we be neighbors? How do we put up with other people? How do we love other people? How do we be a neighbor that people want to have? I've loved this series called Get Off My Lawn. We've been asking, how do we be a neighbor that people want to have? How do we be the neighbor that they don't, that whenever they see us walking down the street, they don't speed up their lawnmower so that they're in the back of their house when we're in the front of their house? If you were here last week, you may have heard our senior pastor, David, say that he does that on purpose. How do we be neighbors that people love neighboring with? This series has really challenged me. I mean, week one, David just, he hit me hard. He said, do you know your neighbor's names? Do you actually know your neighbors? Do you know who lives around you? Do you know their stories? Then in week two, John came out and John just said, hey, if we're going to be great neighbors, we've got to pause and be interruptible to be a neighbor. And then David last week, he challenged us when he said, hey, you've actually got to allow yourself to be interrupted. You've actually got to allow yourself to let other people interrupt your day. And maybe it's an interruption across the street, or maybe it's just an interruption across the hallway at home. How do you put other people first and neighbor well? Well, I've loved this series for a lot of different reasons. One is I never had neighbors growing up, so this whole concept of neighboring is kind of new to me. And so I love learning how to like be the neighbor that other people want to have. I grew up down in the mountains, and my dad had this really interesting philosophy in life. His philosophy was you did not have privacy if you could not walk around naked. And he was not talking about inside, folks. So from no point around our house could you see another human being. We had no neighbors within eyesight, and I am so thankful for that. And so the only neighbor we had was like an annoyingly long walk away. And the thing that I loved most about this neighbor was that he was a mechanic, and he was also downhill. And my 74 Volkswagen Beetle that would routinely not start like most Volkswagens do, I would push it, jump in, coast it down the driveway, hit the road, get to his driveway, and then coast it into a shop. And Roger would be sitting there sipping his coffee, and he'd be like, hey, can you crank my car so I can go to school today? I would really appreciate it. I didn't have any neighbors. Well, fast forward a couple of years, my wife and I get married, we move up here, we binge watch all of Friends, and we decide we gotta find our Monica, we gotta find our Chandler, we gotta find our Joey, we need neighbors. And so we just didn't like get a neighbor, we jumped into like the deep end of the neighbor pool. And the way that we jumped into the deep end of the neighbor pool is we bought a row home in downtown Lancaster. And we had like neighbors. Like we shared walls with our neighbors. Like we know every score to the Philadelphia Phillies because of what's coming through the wall. We know when they're winning and we know when they're losing. We also know when their marriage is not good. And we also awkwardly know when it's really good. On the other side, we had the coolest 90-year-old couple live next to us. It was Barney and Mary, and Barney was a World War II aerial photographer. How cool is that, right? Like, when he started telling stories, I'm like, oh, please keep going. And then Mary was just like one of those sweethearts that every time you're around her, you just feel like someone just put a warm blanket around you. They were just incredible. One of the things that I loved about Barney was he loved sweet tea, and he knew what time I would typically be coming home, and right before I parked my car, he would go get a second glass of sweet tea and have it sitting right next to him on his front porch so that once I parked and started walking in, he's like, already poured you a glass, Matt. And so that would be his way of getting me to come up and just catch up on life with him. And that was really fun until the summer that it was like super hot. And I'm walking in and he's like, Matt, I got a nice glass of ice cold sweet tea for you. And I'm like, Barney, you know the weight of my heart. So I hop up and without thinking, I grab this glass and I just slam it. Like I chug like a huge glass of tea, only to discover that joker did not put sweet tea, but straight whiskey in that sucker. Yeah, I spent the next 5 minutes like trying to breathe. Barney spent the next 5 minutes trying to breathe because he was laughing so hard. I was like, I think this is like the highlight of your summer, Barney. He's like, that was funny to watch. I smelled everything he gave me from that point on. So that was the first time in my life I had neighbors, and I was like, I want to be a good neighbor, filling, whiskey and all. Like, I want to be a great neighbor. So how do we do this thing called neighboring? How do we neighbor well? And I hope for each of us who follow Jesus that we ask that question. How do we neighbor well? How do we be the neighbor that our friends and those that are around us say, man, I'm so glad they live in our neighborhood. And if you don't follow Jesus, then I hope you at least watch Mr. Rogers growing up and you ask, how do I be your neighbor? How do we get along with other people in such a way that they want to get along with us? And I've realized that this is the conversation we need to have because I no longer watch Andy Griffith. I watch Criminal Minds. And I binge watched one too many seasons of that, and that will trip you up, folks. I remember walking down the road during trash day, and I'm like, is that leaves or a body? Like, I was convinced everybody in my neighborhood was serial killers after that. So many times, we now are distrusting. We avoid, we're skeptical, we avoid eye contact. We ask, is it really worth our time? We don't engage with people that we don't have to. And we've lost the art of neighboring. We've lost the art of being a part of other people's lives. And so about last month, we finished a series all about God's providence, all about how God moves and shapes and orchestrates and how he's doing things behind the scenes and then saying, hey, you wanna be a part of this? Hey, you wanna be a part of this? Hey, I'm doing something really cool, you wanna join? So if we believe in God's providence, if we believe that God is moving and shaping and working in the world, then we've gotta ask this question. We gotta ask, how do we not miss why God has placed us on our street? How do we not miss why God has placed us on our street? Next to them, with those kids and that dog, at this season, why has God placed us here with them? Why are you their neighbors? I think we gotta ask that question, and my fear is, I know for me, I fear missing that. Because I'm too afraid. They look scary. They got too many trash bags out front. I don't know what's in them. I'm too busy. Man, I'm so guilty of just being so busy that I just run past my neighbors or being too focused on my life and my agenda and my yard and my kids and my family that I just avoid everything else outside of my own focus or distracted. I really got challenged by this one. I went to go get gas the other day and I had my dog with me. And my dog did great. I had the back windows down. And while we're pumping gas, he just sat there talking to me. It was great. I then hop in the front seat to check something on Facebook. And that joker, in 30 seconds of looking at Facebook, decided he wanted to go for a run. And I ran around the gas station for about 30 minutes chasing my dog, completely oblivious to anyone else in the world until I finally got him back in the car to have messages popping up like, hey, saw you running around with your dog. And I was like, I never saw you because I was so distracted on what I was focused on. Or as David said last week, sometimes we just get too selfish. Sometimes we get too focused on us and our world. We miss why God put us next to them at this season. So how do we neighbor like Jesus? How do we neighbor well? We're not the first people to ever ask that. Jesus was actually asked that question. He was asked, how do you neighbor well? What does it mean to be a neighbor? And the context behind the question, the guy who originally asked him this, he didn't have good motives. He wasn't trying to figure out how he actually neighbors. He was actually trying to figure out who he could avoid, who he didn't have to worry about, who he didn't have to care for, so that he could actually be good enough by not caring about all of these people. And so Jesus tells him a story in response about what a neighbor is and how to neighbor well. And that story is one that we've been looking at over the last couple of weeks. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. If you grew up in church, if you grew up around Jesus in the Bible, then you more than likely have heard the story of the Good Samaritan. And if you didn't grow up in church or around Jesus or the Bible, you probably have heard of hospitals or thrift stores or humanitarian agencies or social services with the name Samaritan in them. Like, to be a Good Samaritan now is to be a good person, is to be someone who cares for others. And that cultural adjective comes from this story, this response that Jesus gave to the question of who's my neighbor? How do I neighbor? And so I want us to read the story in Luke chapter 10, where Jesus responds, what does it mean to be a neighbor? So grab your Bibles in the seats. It's on page 792 if you're using one of the Bibles in our seats. Grab your phone, pull it up there. And as you're finding page 792, if you're new to the Bible, the Bible's divided into two halves. The Old Testament leads us to Jesus. The New Testament is because of Jesus. New Testament starts with four guys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, telling the good news of interacting with Jesus. And then Acts is how the church acted. And then Romans all the way to Jude are letters about what it means to follow Jesus, and then Revelations is what to come. So here's one of those four guys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, telling us the good news. So Luke tells us this story of what Jesus, how Jesus responds to who's my neighbor. So page 792. So Jesus replied with a story. It's verse 30. Jesus replied with a story. A Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. By chance, a priest came along. But when he saw the man laying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. A temple assistant walked over and looked at him lying there, but also passed on the other side of the road. Then a despised Samaritan came along, and when he saw the man, he felt compassion on him. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next day he handed the innkeeper two silver coins, telling him, take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. Now, which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? Jesus asked. The man replied, the one who showed him mercy. And then Jesus said, yes, now go and do the same. So a guy's walking down the road. Jewish man walking down the road, gets beat up, left for dead. Two Jewish, cultural, religious, influential leaders see the dude, walk to the other side of the road and avoid him. And then, did you catch the adjective of the Samaritan? A despised Samaritan. See, at that in that day, Samaritans were the cultural, ethnic rejects of the day. Samaritans were the lowest of the totem pole. The Samaritans were the outcasts. The Samaritans were the one who you avoided and forgot and didn't care about. And Jesus said, that was the guy who saw the Jewish guy, and then he went over and cared for him and met his needs and helped him forward. Man, Jesus says, that's a neighbor. That's what a neighbor does. And so when I look at the story, here's some of the things that I see Jesus saying. A neighbor is someone who notices others. They're not so consumed with their own world that they miss everyone else. They actually notice others. They also don't see in us versus them. They don't see us versus them. Do you vote like me? Do you act like me? Do you dress like me? Do you talk like me? Do you listen to music like me? You don't see them. Jesus says he just saw him, who he could help. He didn't see the us versus them. And then he had compassion, but compassion that actually took action, action that actually meant he personally sacrificed, and he gave his time. And then I love these three. He did what he could do. He knew what he was capable of. And then he connected him with experts, the innkeeper. The innkeeper was an expert at caring at this time. And then he didn't make it about him. He didn't wait around for the guy to wake up and pat him on the back and shake his hand and say, thank you so much for saving my life. He just took care of his needs, and then he went on his way. When I read this list of what a neighbor is and what a neighbor does and how a neighbor behaves, and I think about how I treat people, it kind of dawned on me that I don't neighbor that well, but I fish really well. I fish really well. And what I mean by fishing is, whenever I need to interact with someone, I often think, what's the best bait, the best conversation starter there, the best hook, the best question, the best way to get them to engage? And then I think about the best time and the best place, and then I cast it out, hoping that they'll bite on the conversation, and I can hook them, and then I can reel them in. And as I reel them into the conversation, I can take them exactly to where I want them to get exactly what I want from them. So many times I fish in my relationships versus actually neighboring. See, we fish when we make it about our convenience and our time and our place and our situation and the conversation we want to have with the agenda that we're driving. And for our ROI or return on investment, we stop investing when it's not worth our time. or we only invest with an agenda of what we want to get out of it. And so many times we do it for our glory. I mean, how many times do you go serve soup just to be able to take a picture of you serving soup at the soup kitchen, being like, look what I did, I made the world a better place. We do it for our glory and our agenda and our ROI. And what I've realized is many of us, myself included, we know the art of fishing, not neighboring. We know the art of fishing and not neighboring. Of fishing. I mean, how many times have you just happened to bump into your neighbor as they were taking out the trash just to say, hey, your dog's pooping in my yard again? Or to ask, hey, is your lawnmower broken? Or are you just waiting for the hay baler to come? Just curious. Or, man, is everything okay? I heard the fight the other day. It woke up the baby. Or, hey, can I help fix the car that's in my parking spot? Or, hey, does your dog have a superhero power? Because it's barked for, I think, 72 hours straight now. Or maybe you fish with your friends. Hey, I'll babysit for you if you babysit for me. I'll give you Netflix login if I get your Hulu login. Hey, I'll take you to the airport. I got a trip next month. Or, man, I listened to this podcast. You will love it because you are so screwed up. Or maybe you fish with your family. Hey, honey, if you're looking for your shoes, they're all over the living room. Hey, son, washer's empty. You want to take care of the dead animal smell coming from your bedroom. Hey, honey, check the weather today. It is a great day for you to cut the grass. Hey, do you just want to watch me cook dinner, or do you actually want to like load the dishwasher? That'd be a great thing. Or the one that I'm guilty of so much, it's the end of the night, and it's like, hey, honey, I washed the dishes, I took a bath, and I put the kids to bed. Yeah, doesn't work. Man, if Jesus taught us anything about how to neighbor, it was to cut the line and to simply love. To cut all the strings and just love. To love without an agenda, without ulterior motives. To love without manipulation or get them to go where we want them to do. Conniving, that's the word. It's just to simply love, to cut the lines and to simply love. And so if we're going to love as Jesus calls us to love, we gotta check our motives. And this got really, really hard for me early in our marriage. I had someone give me a book that just challenged me a ton on this. It's a book by a guy named Anthony DeMello. It's called The Way to Love. And Anthony DeMello, he's a Jesuit priest from India. And he wrote about this idea that many of us, we actually don't love the person. We love what the person gives us. Many of us don't actually love the person. We love what we get from the person. We don't love them. We love their attention. We don't love them. We love their care. We don't love them. We love their company. We don't love them. We love their affirmation. We don't love them. We love the fun we have with them. We don't love them. We love the pleasure we get from them. And when what we love from them stops, we stop loving them. Because we actually don't love them. We love what we get from them. And I remember reading this book, and it was early in our marriage, and I found myself asking, like, do I love my wife? Or do I love having someone to go to parties with? Do I love my wife? Or do I love having someone ask me about my day when I get home? Do I love my wife? Or do I love having someone who thinks I'm funny and they listen to my stories? Do I love my wife? Or do I love her affection? Do I love my wife? Or do I love what I get from her? Do I love my friends? Or do I love that we swap babysitting? That we enjoy the same things, that we have fun together, that they break up the boredom and monotony of life. Do I love my coworkers? Or do I love the fact that they're the least weird one in the office? Do I love my coworkers? Or do I love the fact that they're reliable and they get the job done so I can depend on them? Do I love my neighbors? Or do I love the fact that my neighbor keeps to himself? His dog doesn't bother me. His kids are normal. They don't park on my side of the road. Do I love them, or do I love what I get from them? And DeMello said something that has just stuck with me. He said, you can never truly love someone until you expect nothing from them. You can't truly love someone until you expect nothing from them. But DeMello wasn't the first person to ever say this. In fact, Jesus said it this way. Jesus said, if you love only those who love you, Why should you get a credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. And Peter, who actually heard the Good Samaritan story live, he said, show sincere love to each other as brothers and sisters. Love each other deeply with all your heart. And John, who was also there for the story, he said, since God loved us that much, we surely ought to love each other. And Paul said it, he said, don't just pretend to love others, really love them. And then James, the half-brother of Jesus, he said, love your neighbors as yourself. Basically, all the people who hung out with Jesus, they ended up saying in one way or another, once you've experienced God's unconditional, no strings attached, cut the line love, then you just gotta give love. You gotta give sincere love, honest love, genuine love, not manipulating, conniving, trying to twist and deceive love. No strings attached love. Love just to love, not to get something in return. So when you think about your relationships, maybe it's your spouse, your kids, your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, do you genuinely love them? Sincerely love them? Or do you pretend to so that you have a friend at work? So that you feel accepted? So you feel liked? You feel noticed. You have someone to have fun with. If I'm honest, this is hard for me because I will often love the neighbor who loves me back. I'll wave at the neighbor who waves back. I'll take cookies to the neighbor who brings cookies to my house. I'll help remove the snow for the one who helps remove my snow. Those who are kind, I'm often kind to, and those that aren't, I just have a really good way of not seeing them. My friends, I'm often friends with people who are easy to be friends with, who do the same things I wanna do, who enjoy playing the way that I like playing or into the activities that I'm into. I actually had a friend come up, we were friends for years. And about 2 years ago, he moved down to Texas and he was up this a couple of days ago and we got lunch to catch up. And he, we had a good time catching up. And at the end of our time, he just looked at me and he goes, hey, Matt, I just need you to know that when you stopped returning my phone calls, that hurt. And that's not what a friend does. And I realized I was guilty of being his friend, of loving him when it was easy. But the second he moved, all of a sudden it's like that whole relationship changed. Family members, it's easy to hang out with the family members who vote like us, talk like us, dress like us, eat like us, parent like us, vacation like us. And the ones who are difficult, the ones who we don't feel like we get anything back from, to just say, oh, we'll see them next holiday, wedding, or funeral. And to just say, hey, we're not gonna go there because it's just, you just don't get anything in return. How do we cut all the strings to love with no attachments, to truly love someone sincerely? How do we be known as being the neighbor who loans tools without any strings attached and cares for people without any ambition of things in return, of just noticing others and caring for them? How do we love sincerely as Jesus calls us to love? What I know is you can only love like that when you've allowed yourself to be loved like that. You can only love like that when you've allowed yourself to be loved like that. Some of us have had family members and friends who've loved us with an unconditional love. Many of us have had one person or one situation who loved us with so many strings attached that now we think anyone's effort to love us is conditional. It's scorekeeping. They're manipulating. They're trying to angle for something. And so we kind of hold people at an arm's length, like trying to see how they're going to try to use us in this situation. And so we never allow anyone to love us. And the truth is, people will never love you purely. People will always let you down. And my hope is that this week, we'll stop looking for our friends to love us that way, and for our coworkers and our neighbors, and we'll start looking for God to love us that way. Because God's love truly is unconditional. God's love says, I love you no matter what. I care for you no matter what. Believe it or not, God is not fishing you. He's not trying to manipulate you. He's not trying to move you into behavior modification. He is just trying to love you. And something happens whenever we just trust that and accept that and to say, okay, God, I want to be loved by you. I want to experience that love because I want God's heart. Because I know that whenever I experience God's unconditional love, then all of a sudden I've got a place to draw from to give unconditional love. I want to experience God's unconditional love because I want to love my wife with an unconditional love. And I want to love my boys with an unconditional love and my family and my friends and my coworkers and my neighbors. I want to love with unconditional love, all strings cut, without an agenda, without looking for an ROI. I want to be known as someone who loves that way. And I can only do that when I allow myself to be loved that way. And if that's you, and if you're saying, I want to know that love, then man, at every campus, down at the corner, there's a team waiting to talk to you about what does it mean to experience that type of love? Because that type of love changes us. And it changes how we interact, and it changes our families and our relationships and our neighborhoods. And I believe it can change the world. But it all starts when you let God change your heart and you experience his heart. So this week, man, will you let God love you? Will you experience that type of love? And then, would you take a dare? I got three challenges for you that I hope you will pick one and do one of these this week. The first one is, would you be willing to ask, who could I serve this week who can't serve me back? Who can I serve this week who can't serve me back? That you just unconditionally go out and do something for them, maybe in a way that they don't know it's you. You drop off groceries when they're not home. You cut their grass when they're at work. You watch their kids even though you don't have kids. Who is someone you can serve with no expectation or opportunity to serve you back? Or maybe for you, this week it's asking, what's good for the person in front of me? What's good for the person in front of me? Not what's good for my time, my agenda, my ego, my wallet, my calendar. What's good for the person in front of me, not what's good for me? And put them first. Love them first. If I'm honest, this is the one that I got to focus on this week. And I realized I got to focus on this one because I got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. And about 14 million times a day, I get asked, Daddy, do you want to wrestle? 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 And I, so many times I'm like, I just want to beat this level in this game because I'm trying to beat your mom. And she's on level 218 and I want to get to level 219. Give me just a minute. I care more about me than who the one is in front of me. And so for me this week, I want to love with no strings attached. And I want to love the person in front of me. But maybe for you, what you need to commit to is just, what little nudges have you been saying no to that you need to say yes to? Man, as we follow Jesus and we follow God's working in the world, he will nudge us, invite us, draw us with little nudges to join him. And so many times we just say no. We come up with excuses. We rationalize why we can't go there. We can't do that. That would be weird. They would think I'm strange. What would it look like if this week you just said yes? You said yes to calling your sister, to throwing the party, to writing the letter, to cutting the grass, to taking the groceries. Whatever it is that God's nudging you to do, instead of saying no yet again, you just said, okay, God, I trust. Yes, I will do it. Because when we cut the lines, we cut the strings, and we love with no strings attached, that's when we start to neighbor how Jesus calls us to neighbor. But that only comes as we experience God's heart. And he changes our heart in such a way with his unconditional love that we then can give unconditional love. So how would your life, your marriage, your family, your neighbors, your coworkers, how would your world change if this week you truly cut the line and you simply loved? Let's pray. Jesus, I want to be known as someone who just genuinely, honestly, sincerely loves those around me. And God, I know that I can't do that without experiencing your genuine, honest, sincere love for me. So God, help me experience your heart and to allow your heart to change my heart. And God, for each of us in this room, I pray that this week, we will let you love us, that we will accept that love, and we'll embrace it and be changed by it, and that your heart will become our heart. And God, I pray that we'll serve someone who cannot serve us back just to love them. I pray that we will do what's best for the person in front of us, not what's best for our time or our ego or our agenda, but just what's best for them. And God, I pray that we'll also say yes to your little nudges that we may have been saying no to. Because God, we want to be a people who neighbor well, who love well with no strings attached. So Jesus, give us your heart so that we can love others. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.